Hello, everyone. Welcome to or welcome back to the Perfectly Imperfect podcast. I'm your host, Jenny Minnie, and I'm here today with a very, very special guest, Emily Hirsch. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yes, I'm so excited you're here as well. For context, Emily and I have been friends for a long time now.
Yeah.
What, since 2020-ish, 2019? Yeah. We met at university, at Northeastern University, mm-hmm. in an architecture program. Back in the day, we both are not architects at all now.
So funny.
Yeah. So, and you're here in New York City doing a grad program in social work?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. How's that been going?
Good. Really good. Yeah. I'm excited to tell you more about it.
Yeah. I'm excited to hear more. So with all of my guests, I have been loving doing like a little reflection moment called Rosebud Thorn.
Okay.
So think of something like a rose recently would be something more positive, kind of exciting in your life. The bud is something you're looking forward to, and a thorn is maybe a recent challenge that you've been facing.
Okay.
Whatever you feel comfortable. You also don't have to do all three.
I think I got it.
Cool.
Okay, so I think my rose is actually this conversation. I feel like I haven't seen you in a while, and it's just really nice to catch up and see you. It's so nice, like, connecting with old friends and just, like, hearing about what each other are up to. So I'm really enjoying spending time with you today.
Me too.
I think my bud is that I'm going on a really exciting trip on Tuesday, and I'm just like, I have the travel bug. I'm ready to like go and explore and like spend some time with my sister. So I'm really excited for that. And I would say my thorn is probably just having like a little bit of a rockier winter with recovery and mental health, and just kind of like staying true to myself while also navigating just, you know, challenges that come up. So
yeah I definitely really relate to that thorn for sure. Yeah. I feel like in the last few guest episodes it's always been like the winter, the cold, mm-hmm. and the mental health, and yeah, it's just kind of, I feel like, a natural ebb and flow of life, but it doesn't invalidate kind of the toughness of that time period for
definitely.
Sure.
Definitely.
So yeah, I would probably say that's my thorn, I guess, to start with my thorn, just the winter cold, and yeah, struggling a bit with just feeling kind of energized and motivated, and but I know that'll come with the sun coming out. Then mm-hmm. even in the past few days, like, it's just been feeling so much better already. My rose recently, I think maybe opposing the thorn, just the sun is definitely mm-hmm. like a rose of mine, and also feeling like I'm socializing again, meeting new people, reconnecting with you, and I've been meeting up with new people in the city as well, just grabbing coffee and kind of not letting those insecurities of reaching out to strangers get to me, and it's just been kind of filling my cup so much more than I really thought it would. Mm-hmm. So that's been wonderful.
That's awesome.
And then bud, similar to you as well, travel plans coming up in March, so yeah, I feel like we're like on the same wavelength here.
It's so exciting. Like, just knowing that you have fun things coming up ahead, I think also gets you through those like winter months where you're like, oh, like, it's cold. I don't feel like doing things, when you know, like, okay, I can look forward to these things and the sun and all of like the brightness that comes with spring and summer. So
yeah, exactly. And I feel like that's just been so key as well to my own like healing journey, mental health journey. Like, it doesn't have to be some sort of big extravagant plan like a trip. Like, that's great if it is, but even just putting small things on the calendar for myself to look forward to, so it doesn't feel like, I don't know, or it makes the day by day and the little challenges feel a little less overwhelming, because it's like, well, I have that to look forward to, and that's a positive, that's mm-hmm. something, I don't know. Yeah, that's been helping me a lot.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
Well, is there anything else you want to tell about yourself? Give a little intro.
I mean, this question always feels a little tricky, because it's like, what do you say about yourself? But my name is Emily, which we've already been over, but I just moved to New York in August. I am in grad school at NYU studying social work. And I have the goal of being a therapist one day in private practice. And I don't know, it's just such an interesting time in my life, like moving to the city, being back in school, meeting new people, like experiencing a new place and new, I don't know, activities. So it's really exciting, but I think it can also be a little overwhelming. So it's just been about like navigating the challenges with no judgment and allowing myself to just like fully experience things. And yeah, I would say things are going really well. I love New York. I love to like cook and eat out and like experience things in a city, so this is definitely like the perfect place to do that, because there's so much going on here at all times. So I'm really enjoying like making the most of New York City. And well, Jenny and I were actually just talking about this, but an older hobby of mine is photography, which is something that I've definitely taken a break from, and like a very long break from, and I've definitely lost like that touch that I used to have. So I really want to get back into it. I like will test it out every once in a while and then just not really stick with it. So a goal of mine is to kind of like commit and get back into like really like getting into the swing of things, I guess.
Yeah. No, I feel the same way with certain creative outlets. I feel like during high school, I don't know if you were doing more photography in high school, but I feel like that was when I had time to kind of try out different things. Mm-hmm. I was doing a lot of ceramics, a lot of painting, mm-hmm. but then like college hit and it's just like you do your major, life's so busy, mm-hmm. and then your friends, you're socializing, and I don't know, the hobbies kind of easily slip off. And then mm-hmm. I feel like when I graduated, I was like, great, I'll have so much more time to work on my hobbies and feel, you know, creatively connected with things like that. But it's equally just as hard to keep on top of. So
yeah. And it's also hard to like get back into it once you've taken a break, because mm-hmm. I think for me with photography, like I used to feel like I was really good at it and I used to be really like proud of the results and the photos I was taking. And then when I, you know, get back into it, I think as most things, when you have a long, you know, period of time in between, like the skills aren't as like fine-tuned as they used to, and the knowledge isn't there, and you know, it's getting back into practicing. And I think that like with my perfectionist brain, I get very frustrated with myself, and then I'm like, forget it, like I'm not good at this anymore, like I'll just stop. So I think it's kind of like putting my own like insecurities and like, you know, doubts to the side and just like letting myself enjoy the creative process versus like being so like harsh with the results.
Right. Yeah, no, that's so important. Yeah. And just like letting yourself find joy in the process, like you just said, and showing up imperfectly is something I'm really working on. It's not easy to do. I think our brains work similarly with like kind of that wanting to feel prepared, wanting to know the outcomes, wanting to know that you're going to do it and perform to a certain level. But sometimes we just can't know those things. Yeah. And I feel like it's really hard to accept that. And yeah, that's something I'm definitely working on. But just allowing myself to even just like try it for 5 minutes or just take one little small step and validating that is hard. But I feel like it's been helping me just sort of, I don't know, like crochet. I don't know if it's here, it's over there. But that was also something I like have been wanting to get back into. Mm-hmm. But I was like, well, I don't have the skills. I haven't been doing it well enough. What if I don't know how to like make a bag as well as I used to? But, you know, a couple of days ago, I just was like, okay, well, I'll just try it.
And yeah.
Even now, like this past weekend, I was like, I want to get back into it a little bit more. But still, I'm noticing those perfectionist mindsets being like, well, you're not as good as before. You're not as good as before. But that's not a reason not to do it.
Right.
Yeah.
I feel like it's funny because when we met, Jenny and I were both doing architecture and COVID hit and then we were moved online and we used to literally FaceTime from our own homes and it would be like 3 a.m. and we'd be like delusionally like editing our work being like, this isn't looking right and this isn't good. And I feel like it's almost like in a way how we connected initially about like, it's fine. Like we have to just get our assignments done. Like it's good enough. Like we don't need to actually stay up all night working on this. And we need to just kind of be okay with things looking imperfect and just embracing the process a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm always so grateful that throughout our friendship, we've been able to have like conversations like that. And
Me too.
So moving on to my next question for you, we have also talked about, speaking of our friendship, we have shared a lot about our own recovery journeys with each other, support each other, and you have been a huge support in my own journey. Oh. So I'm so forever grateful for you and your support and your friendship. But as I talk a lot about that on this podcast, would you be open to sharing kind of your own journey with your relationship with food and your eating disorder and recovery and you know, whatever you feel comfortable sharing here?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, my eating disorder journey has been almost 11 years this April, which is kind of crazy that it's been such a long time. You know, very long story short, when I was in eighth grade, I was having a lot of mental health issues, control issues, perfectionist issues, and it ultimately, without me even like consciously realizing, led me to develop a really severe eating disorder. I was hospitalized and I think it was just like a really big wake-up call that your mental health can have such a severe impact on your physical health and like without you even necessarily realizing it or like intending for it to.
Yeah.
When I was in the hospital, I would say at my like lowest point ever with my eating disorder, I couldn't walk and they had me in a wheelchair and it was just a very scary moment where I think I was able to use my body functionality as a really big motivator to recover, because I would never allow myself to, you know, go back to the hospital, which of course is not always like within someone's control within recovery, because sometimes, you know, you just can't control things. But it was a big motivator to not go back to the hospital, that I, you know, wanted to always be able to walk, which sounds like, you know, something that we always take for granted. But then when you kind of lose that, you're like, whoa, like, food really is fuel. Like, we say that to ourselves all the time, but like, it really legitimately like allows our bodies to function and thrive. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I've always reminded myself in recovery, because that was just such a dark time in my life. And, you know, I've been in and out of recovery for, you know, 10 years now, which is really crazy, because 10 years when you're 24 is like such a huge portion of your life. Yeah. So I think initially I was very private about my eating disorder. I carried a lot of shame and guilt, and still at times I do. But I think that once I became more vocal about it, I was able to heal from a standpoint of, like, this isn't something that I need to feel so insecure about. It's just, like, my human struggle. It's something that I deal with. You know, everyone has something that they're dealing with. And I think my relationship with food and my body has kind of changed over time, like, in different points in my life. And I think right now I really, really try to separate my judgments of my body from the way that I treat it. And I really, really try to maintain consistent with how I fuel my body, because I have a lot of goals and aspirations and relationships that are important to me. And I know that from, you know, past experiences, that those can all unfortunately have to just kind of like get pushed to the side if you're not taking care of your health. So,
Yeah. Yeah, well, thank you for sharing. And yeah, that's so important. And I think in the moment when you're sort of very consumed by your eating disorder, at least in my experience as well, your eating disorder will kind of make you forget that all those other things are really important to you. And it'll just be like, well, no, the eating disorder is most important right now. You need to, you know, live this way.
Yeah.
But then, like you said, once you realize and start experiencing the friendships, the opportunities, your energy levels, just your ability to do day-to-day things, when you feel that like slipping and lacking, it kind of helps put things into perspective. At least that was a huge part of my recovery as well, just putting that into perspective and realizing like those are reasons enough to continue to recover, to continue to fuel my body and give my body the energy so that I can sustain and maintain these things that bring me so much joy in life. And despite, you know, the eating disorder trying to convince you that they aren't important to you, it's just like really reminding yourself. And it is extra effort than people who don't struggle with an eating disorder. Yeah. And so, yeah, it's so valid that it's more difficult, but it's, yeah, that's been a huge motivation for me in my recovery.
And also I want to say that, you know, I do sometimes hesitate with sharing my eating disorder story, because I think that online it can be such a place where people, especially within the recovery community, can compare their own eating disorder to someone else's and the severity and all of that. And you know, I did have a pretty severe eating disorder that I think sometimes someone can interpret as, oh, if I wasn't as sick as her, then mine's not valid or real. And that's just something that always, you know, I want to be authentic to what I actually did experience and share my genuine experience. But I also don't want to ever make someone feel like they're not sick enough or, you know, deserving enough of receiving some type of care or needing support. So I guess for anyone out there who's struggling, my story can exist at the same time as your story, and our journeys can be similar but different. And that doesn't mean that if you are, you know, in a different position than I am, that you're not sick enough or deserving enough to get the help and support that you need. And I think that that's something that's just really important to like make sure that is so clear online, because I think that even when, you know, I think we both try to create this very like authentic and real space on social media, like we also can't control how people perceive what we're putting online and how they're internalizing it with their own mental health. So I always like to just put that disclaimer out there that like everyone's journey is different and everyone is deserving of the same amount of care and support. And, you know, it doesn't have to, you don't have to like be, you know, going to the hospital for you to be sick enough to like get support or for your eating disorder to be valid enough for like needing that support and attention.
Yeah. No, I'm so glad you said that. Yeah. Yeah. Cause I think that is a real thing, that the comparison and the competitiveness that is apparent in a lot of people who struggle with eating disorders, but just knowing, you know, exactly what you said, everyone is deserving of of healing, of recovery, mm-hmm. at no matter what stage, even if you're just thinking, do I have an eating disorder, yeah. and you haven't been diagnosed or haven't gone to the hospital or you haven't, you know, dealt with any of those things that maybe you're speaking on today, yeah. like you're still equally deserving and worthy of receiving that help and validating your own experience.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. Of course.
So important. Yeah. Yeah. And this is kind of a little bit off the topic of my questions, but I was just reminded that you actually came up in one of my previous episodes recently.
Really?
I didn't say your name, but I mentioned you because I was doing a Q&A episode and someone asked me, how did you gain confidence or how did you start telling people about your eating disorder? And I was brought back to our dinner we had, I think, four or five yeah. years ago. And feel free to share what you feel comfortable mm-hmm. with. But I just remember that dinner, and I guess for context, if you didn't listen to the episode, basically Emily opened up to me about her own eating disorder. And that was kind of a big wake-up call for me at the time as well to start validating my own struggles and realizing maybe the unhealthy habits and mindsets that I was struggling with mm-hmm. without really knowing. Mm-hmm. So that was such an important like turning point in my life and in my recovery. Oh. And so I don't know if you have any thoughts and want to speak on that and kind of what made you feel comfortable coming to me and opening up about that with me.
I think if I'm being like completely honest, and this is something that I have been asked a decent amount of times, like when you know that a friend is struggling, but they haven't verbalized it, how do you support them? Mm. And I think the approach that I've always kind of taken is just kind of being vulnerable and sharing my own struggle, because I think that that can kind of, I mean, luckily in this case, it did happen that way, where it yeah. encouraged you to realize that I'm a safe person and a safe space to be able to be vulnerable and, you know, open with. I think that mental health and eating disorders have a lot of stigma. And if you don't know for sure, well, one, if you don't even know in your own brain what you're dealing with, it can also be overwhelming to put that into words to begin with. But then also, like, you know, who's a safe person to share it with? And, you know, are yeah. they going to judge me? Are they going to understand? Like, there's all these questions that we say. So I feel like I could tell just from, you know, my own experiences that you were dealing with something similar. I didn't know what it was. We never talked about it. But I think that my gut instinct was to kind of just put it out there that this is something that I was dealing with, knowing that there was a chance it would encourage you to realize that you weren't alone and that you could also open up to me. And I'm really lucky and happy that you felt like you could.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I hadn't really thought of that moment too much. Like, as much as it was a pivotal moment, I feel like we've had so many beautiful moments yeah. since. But that definitely was, a very important moment in my life. And so, yeah, it's interesting to hear your perspective. And I think yeah. I had an inkling that maybe you were bringing that up because you noticed something in me, mm-hmm. or I didn't know if it was just we were at that point in our friendship where yeah. we were connecting more and opening up more. But, yeah, well, shows you're going to be a good therapist in the future, because that worked for me. It really did help so much. Have you ever felt like your body is trying to tell you something, but you just can't figure out what? Maybe your energy crashes out of nowhere, your mood is all over the place, or no matter how well you take care of yourself, you just still feel off? I know I've been there. And for the longest time, I thought it was just stress or bad sleep, but what I've learned after being on my own hormone balancing journey this past year is that a lot of these symptoms are often tied to our hormones. This is where Happy Mammoth comes in. They offer a free 2-minute quiz designed to help you uncover the root cause of your symptoms. After taking the quiz, you get a personalized recommendation to help get your body back in balance. When I took the quiz, one of the recommendations I got was to start taking Hormone Harmony. Hormone Harmony is an herbal formula supplement that fine-tunes the hormonal system and is used by women of all ages. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. Using only science-backed ingredients, they offer a range of products designed to help you feel like yourself again. Head over to happymammoth.com and take their free 2-minute hormone quiz today to find the ultimate answer to your hormonal issues. For a limited time, you can also get 15% off your entire first order with my code PIPOD at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code PIPOD, PIPOD, for 15% off today.
I'm so happy to hear that.
Yeah. So moving on to my next question for you. You studied psychology in undergrad at Northeastern, yeah. where we both went, and are now in grad school for social work, like you mentioned. So I'm very curious, like, how your studies and your future career and desire to be a therapist, like, how has that maybe influenced your recovery journey, or maybe vice versa? Mm-hmm. Did your recovery and your mental health journey spark an interest in this field?
That's such a good question. Both going through recovery Well, first, I think that was kind of my main inspiration to like wanting to be a therapist, because, well, I think so much of the time when we're going through hard moments, regardless of what they are, we're like, what is the reason I'm going through this? Like, what is this supposed to teach me when I'm on the other end of this? Like, it can't just be for nothing. And I think so much of the times, and like for myself included, like you just feel stronger. You're just like, I went through like a really hard time and I learned so much about myself, and I'm really proud of, you know, the effort and the, you know, strength that it took to come out on the other side. But then I also think, you know, I was in college, you know, during this time where I was kind of thinking like, you know, what am I supposed to do with my life? It's such a time where you're like, what strengths do I have? You know, what passions do I have? What do I want to do? I really played the long game with, you know, let me try architecture, let me try business, I want to be pre-med, I want to, you know, I really, marketing, I did project management, I really think I went through like 10 majors in college. But I actually think that that was all to avoid what I knew was what was best for me, which was being a therapist. I just really enjoy connecting with others, learning about others, helping others. And I just think that that's always kind of been like a strength of mine. And I think I was kind of pushing it aside because I was like, no, I'm only kind of coming to this for personal reasons. But I think that, like, that's allowed. Like, you're allowed to have personal reasons that really inform your career. So I think that was kind of, like, the inspiration for this kind of path of study, career interest. At the same time, though, you know, being a therapist, it's really important. I'm not a therapist yet, but being a future therapist and kind of considering what I would want to specialize in and focus on and all of that, it's really important to understand how your own experiences and biases can affect the type of care that you provide for your clients, and wanting to not transfer your own experiences and thoughts onto someone else, because it's supposed to be a very unbiased space for a client to come in and just, like, you know, use you for the expertise and knowledge that you have.
Right.
So when you think about, you know, can someone who's been in recovery or is in recovery from an eating disorder be an eating disorders therapist? It's like a little bit tricky, because as someone who is actually considering doing this, you have to just be in a really solid place in recovery for it to be possible, which is something that I am kind of struggling with right now, because even though I am in recovery, there are times where I can be triggered and it sets me back for a day. And then I'm like, you know what, if I specialize in this and have clients every single day coming into my office and sharing their struggles, is that going to be too much for me to hold all of their stuff while also navigating my own personal recovery? So I think that it's just a consideration that I don't need to decide right now, and I can understand that it can be challenging, and maybe I, you know, will have a couple clients that have eating disorders and maybe not take on more than that to hold my own, you know, myself accountable for, you know, not allowing myself to get too triggered. But it's a huge consideration and something that, you know, you do have to kind of take into consideration what you can handle, and there's no shame in not being able to handle it also, because you need to make sure that you're making a decision that's like healthy for you.
Right, because at the end of the day, like, you can't show up as the best therapist you can be, and you can't help someone to your best ability if you're not kind of putting yourself first and taking care of yourself and putting up the boundaries that maybe you need.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's so important.
Yeah.
And I was curious, like, going back to what you were talking about in undergrad, how you feel like you tried a bunch of different things.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people listening here are kind of similar age to us, maybe in college, recent post-grads. Like, what would you say helped you? Maybe, like you said, you were pushing off the thing that you knew deep down that you really wanted to do. Like, was there shame around studying psych for you, or shame around wanting to be a therapist, or doubt in yourself about knowing if, like, that's something you could really do? Like, I don't know, I guess what was your journey sort of trying out different things and then ultimately accepting and being okay with following something that really, you know, you felt really deeply called to do?
I think that it kind of was that tug of war of, what am I passionate about, and is my career supposed to be something that I'm passionate about? And I think that, you know, now that, you know, I'm grown up a little bit more, I realize that, like, if that's possible for you, then that's ideal, right? Like, you want to be passionate about your work so that it feels fulfilling every day. But I think that when I was considering what I wanted to do, it's like, well, okay, well, you have to think about what is a good job. And then you have to think about, you know, finances, of course, unfortunately. And you have to think about, you know, a lot of different things that are just, like, real adult considerations. And then I was, like, not sure if it was, like, a naive or, like, I guess naive, like, decision to just do something that I was passionate about just because I was passionate about it. But then I was like, no, I think that's actually a really mature thing to take something that you love so much and to turn it into something that you can do for the rest of your life. So I think I wasn't really confident in making that choice until I had really like exhausted all my other options, which is why I really like did it all. And then when I was just like feeling unfulfilled elsewhere, I was like, no, like there's a reason that I'm feeling unfulfilled. It's because this is not what I'm supposed to be doing. And right. when I got that, you know, I actually still haven't had that feeling because I'm not a therapist yet where I'm like sitting in session day in and day out, like feeling like, yes, I'm doing what I'm supposed to do because it's a process.
Right.
But even just like what I'm learning and thinking about and the considerations that I'm having about, you know, what my career will look like one day, it gets me really excited. And that's not the feeling that I had when I was doing marketing or product management or architecture. And there is literally nothing wrong with any of those things. No, that's just not my thing. It's just I found, you know, something that worked for me. And I think that instead of kind of running away from it, I needed to just embrace it, which I eventually did.
Yeah, I love that. And yeah. I feel like it's so hard to do in the moment because I feel like there's always, and you know, depending on your background, your family, where you're coming from, there mm-hmm. may be external pressures to yeah. do certain things, be certain things, live certain places. So as much as it, you know, it is intuitive to listen to ourselves, it's that voice can be like dampened, or that intuition can be dampened mm-hmm. and overcrowded really easily. So I think the way you said you navigated kind of trying different things, but then also thinking rationally as well when you notice that like something wasn't aligning with you, I think is, you know, really good advice. So thank you. Yeah. And I feel like I tried to do the same kind of thing. Like mm-hmm. you said, we both started studying architecture, and I just realized the future of being an architect didn't quite excite me mm-hmm. as much as maybe being a designer or working for myself or yeah. doing something a little bit more freely creative. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at the time I was like, oh my God, I've spent so many years, so much time in architecture studio. Am I putting it all to waste? But ultimately, like, listening to that intuition for me to like add graphic design and take a little bit step away from architecture and challenging that mindset or that thought of like, I've wasted my time, to just reframing it to like, well, this is just part of my journey. This mm-hmm. is part of the steps that's taking me to where I'm meant to be. And I'm following my intuition along the way.
I also think so much of like what we always classify as like wasted time, or we were exploring other things, we're learning so many other lessons.
Exactly.
That it's never actually time that's wasted. It's just time where we maybe don't feel like we expected that outcome, so then we like classify it as wasted time. But I really think that there's like so much like value in like sitting in those moments where you're like, you know what, I'm actually not happy with this. Let me understand why and figure out what skills I'm not using that I wish I were, and then try something new.
Right.
So I feel happy for both of us that we figured it out.
Yeah. Definitely still a work in progress at times.
Yeah, but definitely. Always.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like just being able to reframe the kind of thoughts that come up around waste of time, because mm-hmm. those can be the most, I feel like, overwhelming, especially as like a recent post-grad and early 20s, even living in New York City. Mm-hmm. Like everyone here in a lot of Western culture is just like, optimize your time, utilize your time, you know, save as much time as possible, be as efficient with everything you do. But mm-hmm. it's you know, and in moments where maybe you don't feel like you're living up to that, it can feel really scary and feel mm-hmm. like you're falling behind. But just reiterating to myself and having conversations with people like you and mm-hmm. talking about it, just like normalizing that maybe you won't feel efficient all the time. Maybe mm-hmm. you won't know exactly where you're going. Maybe it feels like you're wasting time, mm-hmm. but, you know, challenging that and actively reframing it for yourself to be like, I'm not wasting time. I'm learning. Mm-hmm. This is part of my personal journey, regardless of what everyone else is doing around me.
Yeah.
Like those types of things have really helped me a lot.
Yeah. Also like self-care, when you feel like you always need to be on, can feel like such a waste of time. Like if you're not being productive, when you're using that, you know, couple hours you have and you're actually just like taking it slow and taking care of yourself or doing something that's fun. Like I've definitely gone through like a really rocky relationship with that concept of I'm allowed to just do nothing right now. Like I'm allowed mm-hmm. to not be productive in this moment. And that's self-care. And that's actually really beneficial for my mental health, my life, like my brain, my productivity levels, like all of those things. And it took me such a long time to realize that like doing nothing and like doing self-care is like such a productive part of what we like, you know, live in these really busy lives. And it's just really important to incorporate, you know, all of the different things.
Yeah, definitely. That's so key. I feel like I'm still definitely working on that mm-hmm. one for sure, and get stuck in feeling like quote unquote unproductive or unmotivated when I'm listening to my body and just like resting and maybe watching The Bachelor and just doing nothing else. I'm like, oh, but what about this? I should be doing this. This person's doing this. But yeah, exactly what you said. That self-care, that intentional time to just sit with yourself, allow yourself to not be working on things, not be striving for things, not being, you know, finding ways to be more efficient. That's actually probably the most efficient and productive thing you can do for yourself at that time.
I'm also watching The Bachelor, so
oh my gosh, yes. I have been Tuesday nights have been my Bachelor nights.
The best.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing all of that. I feel like it's just an ongoing journey, and like throughout our 20s we will come to new crossroads facing new certain mindsets, but ultimately I feel like this is something that, you know, at whatever stage in life you're gonna face, you just not knowing if you're on the right path, if you're wasting your time, but just learning to listen to yourself is so important. It easier said than done.
Definitely easier said than done.
Yeah. So off of that, do you have any advice for anyone in their own recovery journey and maybe on a journey with healing their relationship with food and their body, or maybe someone who hasn't even committed to healing yet? What would you tell them?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that actually like really goes well off of what you're just talking about with, well, I guess my biggest thing when I was like first realizing I had an eating disorder and like realizing that I probably should recover was, one, there's no like race to recovery. I think so much of the time we feel like we need to like hurry up and recover, and it's just not that's not realistic. Like, it's a process and it's gonna take time, and it's gonna take a lot of time in a lot of cases, and it's okay, and it's allowed to be a really messy up and down process. And I think that a lot of people that struggle with eating disorders struggle with perfectionism and control and these like really rigid mindsets that when recovery is not going our way and it's not going to according to our own timeline, we're like, wait, okay, this is never possible for me. This is never going to work out. I'm going to be sick forever, and all these like really horrible things that we tell ourselves. And that's just not true. And it's just, you know, for everyone, it looks very different. Some people, you know, require different levels of treatment. Some people require treatment multiple times. Some people never have to go to treatment and do it outpatient. Some people never even go to therapy and kind of just can do it on their own. There's such a varying level of support, and there's no right or wrong. And I think that's sometimes what makes recovery a little bit confusing. You know, if we have, let's say, like, I'm actually not going to just like pick one, but if there, we had like a is strictly biological medical condition, you know, a lot of the times there's like a specific treatment that works for that, and you take a medication or you go to physical therapy or you see this type of doctor, and then that's just like the way that you, you know, recover or are treated for that. I think eating disorders are, I mean, A, there's a lot of different kinds of eating disorders, but then B, there's a lot of different types of treatment for eating disorders, and it makes it really confusing to navigate because you're like, well, what is best for me? What am I supposed to do? And I also think that because it's mental health related, it's very taboo to talk about and can be scary to even like acknowledge that you have a problem to begin with. Like, you know, before I was told by a doctor while when I was in the hospital that I had an eating disorder, I had not even considered it, realized it. Like, I was I was put in an eating disorders hospital, but didn't know when I was sitting in that room that I had an eating disorder. It was like the most confusing thing. And I think there are so many different like scary points throughout recovery where you're like, it's okay that I have a problem. Like, I'm allowed to struggle, and I'm allowed to ask for help, and I'm allowed to just kind of like lean into this process and be scared anyway, and just really like try, because trying is the only way that you're going to eventually, you know, figure it out. And I also think for me that at the very, very beginning, I didn't want to recover. So then I felt pressure by society and my treatment team that like, oh, well, you have to recover. That's like what you do when you have an eating disorder. But I just was very comfortable in my disordered life. I really didn't see like the need to recover. And until I found the motivation within me that it was a change that I wanted to make, of course I wasn't going to recover, because, you know, the real changes only come from within. And I think that's another thing that's not always discussed, is that to be successful in recovery, you have to want it, because it's not easy, and you have to be willing to kind of like be in uncomfortable moments and to think uncomfortable thoughts and to, you know, it's just a really, really hard process. And I think that it takes a lot of courage and strength. And if you are kind of half in, half out, the results and the feeling at the end are going to just not be the same as if you're like, okay, you know what, this is going to suck and I'm going to hate this and I'm going to like be really emotional and run down, but like I really need to commit to doing this for myself and my body. Like, that's when I saw the biggest results in my own recovery. And that would be, I guess, like one of my biggest pieces of advice is that there is no rush to recover and there is no rush to want to recover. And I think that so much of the time we're kind of put into this box of like, okay, well, you're sick, you have a problem, you need to fix your problem. But it's such like an evolving issue that you really just need to go at your own pace and like commit to things that you're ready to commit to. And like at times take a leap of faith that maybe you don't think you're ready for, but you're not like, I can do this, I'm strong enough. And that is when I at least personally saw the biggest results.
Yeah, I relate to a lot of that. And I feel like at the beginning, it's, you don't want to make those changes. Yeah. You don't want to put yourself through all that discomfort of rethinking through things, redoing things in different ways than you have been for maybe years and, mm-hmm. you know, a long time beforehand. So, yeah, and I think for myself, for a while I was maybe like in quote unquote recovery, but I wasn't in it. My mm-hmm. heart, my head, like I didn't want it. Mm-hmm. And so I think that was a really tough time because I was expecting to feel better, mm-hmm. but I wasn't really like wanting recovery at the mm-hmm. same time. And so I think I had maybe a similar moment to you and just realizing like this will only happen if I'm 100% in, even mm-hmm. if it feels scary, mm-hmm. even if I don't know what 100% looks like, mm-hmm. and even if I don't know what the next step is, ultimately, like, I'm the only one who can change my yeah. life. You can have all the professionals around you. You can have all the love and support from every single person. And, you know, if you have that, that's such something to be so grateful for. Mm-hmm. But all of that can, you know, be great, but not actually make you recover. It won't actually lead you to feeling recovered and feeling good in your recovery, because it like has to come from yourself. And yeah. I feel like that was like always the hardest pill to swallow. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember my boyfriend, even also at the time, I would express to him, I'm feeling discouraged and I'm not making progress. And he's like, well, do you want this? Like, yeah. do you actually want to feel better? And then that would make me think, well, like, obviously I do. But then mm-hmm. thinking on a deeper level, I'm like, well, maybe there is something I'm still really afraid of and I don't mm-hmm. want to change. But that's the part that's like, you know, blocking my road right mm-hmm. now to move forward. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I also think that on the surface, eating disorders really seem like such a simple for people that, you know, aren't experiencing it or don't know someone with eating disorders. I think it can be, well, why don't you just eat more? Why don't you just eat less? Or why don't you just control your diet? Or why don't, whatever your, like, the judgment is from society. I think it's really not understood enough that it's very psychological. Like, yeah. it really is controlled just by the thoughts that we're having and the judgments that we have about ourselves, which contribute to the behaviors that we partake in. But it's not that we're just, like, mindlessly, like, doing a behavior. Like, it's coming right. from, like, a thought process that we have that we need to learn how to reframe, which takes so much time because you're literally trying to rewire your thoughts, which is like so right. hard to do. So
right yeah. yeah yeah just like allowing yourself the time mm-hmm. and space, I think is so important. Yeah, that's really great advice.
Yeah. And also, like, you know, it's been almost 11 years for me and I still am working on it. So I think that it's like, you know, you can look at someone or assume or, you know, hear just like maybe even the way that I'm able to speak about my eating disorder, and it's been such a long time, but I still have, you know, days, months, weeks where it's really difficult in recovery. And I'm like, you know what? I know what I'm supposed to be doing and I am strong enough to do this. But right now I'm just not motivated. And I go through, I don't even always call it a relapse because I think that it's a little bit smaller than that because it's just a shorter amount of time. But like where I just struggle and I'm like, you know what? This is a lifelong journey. I'm going to probably have this issue forever, and that's okay. But it's learning how to take the skills that you learn in recovery and apply those to your harder days and weeks.
Mm, yeah, that ties perfectly into my next question for Ooh, you, perfect. Which is how do you best help yourself through harder moments in recovery? Like, what are those kind of tools that you just mentioned, or maybe certain mindsets or habits that you've found kind of help you in those harder moments?
You're catching me at like such a weird time in my life where I'm coming off of a harder moment and I'm actually kind of still navigating a harder moment. So this is going to be very raw and like, I guess just very real, which of course is the point of this. But like, I think that sometimes when I navigate harder periods of time in recovery, I judge myself a lot because I'm like, Emily, it's been 10 years. Like, get it together. What's your problem? Like, you know that this is not healthy and you know what this does to your body and you know what this does to your brain and all of your relationships and all these things. But, like, it's really hard even still to put those, like, rational, like, bits of knowledge that you've gathered throughout the years into practice when you're just, like, so bogged down with your disorder. I think that something that really helps me when I'm going through a harder time and that I've been really trying to practice lately is planning. Not over planning, not being like, you know, very rigid, but like when I don't feel like I want to eat, I write down what I'm eating that day. Not in like a calorie sense, not in a tracking sense, but in an accountability sense where I'm like, okay, I'm gonna grocery shop and I like eating this for breakfast. So I'm gonna make sure that I have eggs and avocado and whatever in my fridge for breakfast. And then, okay, well, today's a busy day with class, but I need to make sure that I eat lunch because I need to fuel my body and my brain. So what can I have prepped in the fridge that I can grab with me on the go for lunch? And I think really instead of like counting, I don't count anything, but like I prepare things so that I can make sure that I always have food accessible so that it's easy to grab to fuel myself when I'm having a harder time.
Right. Just like lowering the barrier to entry.
Exactly.
To having access to the food and the fuel that you
need.
Yes.
Yeah. I think that that really can help me stay on track is just kind of preparing myself for the moments where I would know that I'm going to be unmotivated to like seek out that fuel.
Right. Yeah. Sometimes in my harder moments, it'll feel like, I don't know, like prepping and helping myself when I'm maybe feeling good in recovery. Like I don't think to maybe prep or I don't really know how to word this, but I think I've struggled with, like you said, the judgment and feeling like it's sort of a sign of weakness to kind of help my future self because I want to think, oh, I'll never face a struggle again in recovery. Oh, I'm only feeling good. I'm feeling good right now. I'm never going to face that struggle. I don't know if that's something you relate to sort of. Like, as much as I want to help myself in my recovery, there's still sort of judgments around helping myself in my... I don't know.
No, I do understand what you're saying. I don't think that that's actually something that I experience because I think that I've been so in and out of recovery for so long, so many times, that I unfortunately expect it to be a problem again. So when I'm in a good moment, I appreciate and I'm grateful for the good moment, but I also know that that's not lasting forever. Just because it never has. And I think in some ways it would be a little naive of me after 10 years to be like, oh, well, I'm going to be fine for the rest. Like, I'm just good to go. So I think I kind of, you know, I'm always hopeful that recovery is long lasting and amazing and all those things. But I also think that I try to be very real with myself to know that right now I'm proud of myself for, you know, being in strong recovery. But that doesn't mean that in a couple weeks from now when I'm overwhelmed for whatever other reason is going on in my life that I might use this to cope. Even though I know I shouldn't, and even though I do other things that are healthier to cope, sometimes I just fall back on it, and it just, then it, like, gets a little bit stuck, and then I, you know, I'm a little stuck in it, and I need to pull myself out, and I think that it's been more habitual in that sense, so I do try to be real with myself that there's a chance it could happen again.
Yeah. No, I think even that in itself is really good advice as well, just being so real and realistic with yourself. I think my recovery journey has been shorter and I think I'm still, you know, not that there's a timeline or anything, but I just still feel like sometimes when I have those setbacks, it feels like such a big step back. And I think a big part of my recovery right now is just like you said, just being realistic with myself that there are going to be harder moments. There are going to be great moments though. And both are valid in my recovery journey. And if one moment feels harder for maybe longer than before, or I'm feeling good for a longer moment than before, I don't know. Yeah, navigating that, the discrepancies has been a little difficult for me at times, but yeah, I guess just being real with yourself and...
No, but I do understand what you're saying.
I don't know where I'm going with this.
Yeah, no, that's so fair. I think that, you know, I try not to be pessimistic because I think that that can be like a downfall is like, oh, well, of course I'm going to struggle again. But I think that like just the reality of eating disorders is that they are chronic. Like they, it's a mindset that unfortunately is as hard as we can work to reframe and as hard as we can work to never have it again. Like it's only natural that at times we might be triggered and we might be able to reframe it and not get stuck in that trigger, but it's going to exist. And at lower points where you're more vulnerable for other reasons because of other hardships you're going through and, you know, life just being life, I think it's always possible that you could end up falling back into old behaviors and habits, not because you're not strong enough and not because you don't rationally know that it's, you know, the right or wrong or whatever thing to do. It's just that we're human and we make mistakes. And when you have an eating disorder and you know that, unfortunately, like, these behaviors serve me in some way, even if it's not in a healthy way, when you're having a harder time with something else, it can be easier to fall back onto them. Mm. But that also doesn't ever discredit the amount of strength it took to get to the point that you are.
Yeah.
And it also proves to you that you have the strength to get out of it again, because you have.
Yeah.
So I think that's also something that I remind myself in harder moments, is that this sucks, it's hard, I'm gonna get through it, I've been through this before, and I'm gonna be okay in the end.
Right. Yeah. And just kind of not letting that hard moment be the definition for the rest of your recovery.
Exactly.
Yeah. 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 That's beautiful. I love that you said that. Thank you. Of course. I feel like I was getting confused on how to word that, but you read what I was getting at so perfectly. Well, thank you so much. Is there anything else you want to add to this conversation, or also maybe if you want to mention where people can find you on social media or anything like that?
I feel like I've taken like a little bit of a break from social media, just like more regularly, so that just like doesn't even, I guess, cross my mind. But Paving My Way is my Instagram. You can find me there. I mean, Jenny also has a page where, you know, she's so vocal and open, and her DMs are always open, and she's such a great resource for people in this community. And I try to be the same. So if you do need anything, you can always reach out, and I'm happy to chat, or just be like, hopefully, a positive space online where you can find some support and inspiration at times. But I don't know. I think that content creation and recovery can be a really difficult thing to kind of navigate hand in hand. And then also for me, I think I'm currently having like a really hard time navigating how, as a future therapist, I'm going to navigate having an online presence that's more vulnerable. So that's also just something that I'm navigating. And additionally, if anyone in Jenny's community is considering grad school, or, you know, considering, you know, becoming a therapist, whether or not you have a history with an eating disorder, you know, or just are interested in general, I've been getting a lot of DMs about that lately, because it's decision time for people right now that have applied. So people are like, what are the differences in these programs and what is this? So I'm trying to kind of be that voice for someone who's going through it. So
yeah. I love that. And you always give your authentic, real perspective.
I do,
and I appreciate that. You know, you're gonna hear it how it is from Emily, and I always appreciate
that. That is so true.
That.
I am very blunt. I keep it real.
But you're polite about it. You know?
I usually am polite about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Always. Oh, well, thank you so much again for coming on the show.
Of course. Thank you for having me. This was so fun.
Of course. I'm glad you enjoyed it. And I feel like you shared so much that I will be taking away from this conversation, and I know so many of these listeners will as well. So thank you so much. And well, that will catch you in the next episode. Bye.
These days, I can do anything from my phone, book a vacation, order a meal from a 5-star restaurant, buy and trade stocks. But maybe the most amazing thing I can do is make my dirty laundry disappear and then reappear perfectly washed and folded. I have Rinse to thank for that. I just schedule a pickup in the Rinse app or at rinse.com. A Rinse valet comes to get my clothes, and before I know it, they're back, crisply folded and ready to wear. They even do dry cleaning, which is returned hanging in a nice Rinse garment bag. And with Rinse, my satisfaction is guaranteed. If for any reason I'm not happy, they'll re-clean my clothes for free. Best of all, Rinse saves me tons of time each week. That's time I get to do something I love versus something I have to do. So if you want to save loads of time by not doing loads of laundry, remember, there's an app for that. Rinse. Sign up now and get $20 off your first order at rinse.com. That's R-I-N-S-E.com.